Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Send it up into the sky. We're calling it Parks and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Parks and Recollection. It is literally the best Parks and Rec podcast you'll ever hear.
Top 100 for sure. No doubt. I mean, look, man, let's not be braggarts about it. maybe top 10, maybe top 10.
I think, by the way, I think braggart is a word that I have not heard in a long time. And I think we need to bring that back. Don't be a braggart.
It's almost like it's, good. It's like medieval times or something, right? It's like an old word.
I know. Well, that's why Alan Yang, my partner on this, gets the big bucks. He is a wordsmith. He's a writer. He wrote on Parks and Recreation. And he can use the word braggart.
It's a very difficult word. It starts with brag, and it's about bragging. we got a big episode today, man. This is a really exciting one. This is like when people talk about the all-time great episodes of Parks, this is often up there. It's often up there. It's kind of one of the ones that kicks it into gear, into like, the real feel of the show. I really enjoy this one.
So Practice Date shows up in the top Parks and Recs for you?
Yeah, I mean, this episode is episode 4, season 2. It's called Practice Date. It's a really, really well-loved episode for a variety of reasons. Just for housekeeping purposes, it first aired on May 7th, 2009. Remember where you were on that date?
Oh, I do.
There you go. You remember when the sunrise and sunset was? You have a
7:02 sort of like, a.m. and the high tide was at 8:35.
Hey guys, I just want to say I checked my records and sunrise that day was at 5:58 a.m. The high tide actually hit at 9:32 a.m. and the mercury topped off at an 89.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Back to you.
It was written by the legend, the man, the legend, Harris Whittles, and directed by Alex Hardcastle. Yeah. This is a little bit of a Harris tour de force. I'd like to get into a little bit more of that later. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is one that people talk about because it's the introduction of so many different things, so many different games.
And I have only two words for you. Duke Silver.
It's a wild swing for the show. So I remember when that got pitched in the writer's room and it was like, are we really going to do this? This seems really insane. Like, I don't know if we could do this. Seems like a big swing for this character who previously up to this point, you know, we're talking about Ron Swanson, of course, had been very buttoned up and wore suits and all that kind of stuff. And so, what we did with him was kind of different. Shall I read an episode synopsis, Rob? Would you enjoy that?
I would so enjoy it.
You know, for all you synopsis fans out here, let's get into the synopsis.
Yeah.
A local story breaks about Pawnee Councilman Bill Dexhart.
Wait, should I be like a choir and say things like, during your synopsis, would that make it more entertaining, do you think?
I'm sure that would make our audio engineers thrilled. I'm sure just tons of crosstalk and
I could be like, who?
A lot of amens.
Say it again.
Like, oh, I remember that guy. just people tearing their hair out. I actually don't know how the engineering works, but I don't know. Sure. I mean, feel free.
I'll try it. this time. I'm gonna try it this time.
So there's a story about Councilman Dexhart.
Who?
At a press conference, Councilman Dexhart, played by Kevin Simon.
Yeah.
At a press conference, he admits to having four-way sex in a Brazilian cave while pretending to be, quote, building houses for the underprivileged, unquote. The scandal inspires Tom to start a game with the other parks employees to see who can get the most dirt on each other. Ooh. During the game, Ron and Tom find some incredible dirt on one another and decide to call a truce. The game also prompts Mark to be more open and honest with Anne.
Aww.
Meanwhile, Anne and Leslie try to tackle Leslie's nervousness about her first date with Officer Dave by pretending to expose her to terrible date scenarios. When Anne tells her she's now ready, the two celebrate and have drinks. Later, a drunken Leslie visits Dave's house. Dave seems annoyed and takes her home. The next day, Leslie tries to apologize to Dave, but he says she can make it up to him on their second date, saying the worst is behind them. So that's a very quick summary, but it's a very rich episode. You know, it's a very rich episode. So much so that you almost can't tell what the A story and B story are. You know, usually the main character, Leslie, you'd say that's you know, very simply the A story. But in this one, they're both really really complicated stories.
This episode opens with all the people in the Parks Department watching the scene we've seen a ton of times where some contrite politician is having just eat a shit sandwich and apologize for something they've done, and he's saying, and to my wife, I apologize. All I can say is, I wasn't just having sex. I was making love to a beautiful woman and her boyfriend and a third person whose name I never learned. And it goes on, but it's so, see, this, I love Parks when it's in this gear, because it's got an edge to it, and I think a lot of that's Harris. I go, oh, you just know this is going to be good when it opens with that kind of a gambit.
Yeah, I just want to shout out Harrison, and I wanted to talk about this with this episode because it's the first one he's credited with writing, and he joined the writing staff season two. And for people who don't know who Harris was, Harris was a really funny writer, stand up comedian, actor. You know, he did a lot of. You know, he did all kinds of things in comedy, but he's one of the funniest people I'd ever met in my life. And you know, he passed away a few years ago, but the mark he left on comedy and a lot of different shows. You know, he worked on not just Parks and Rec, but he worked on Master None with us. He worked on Eastbound and Down, Sarah Silverman show. His young life, he had a lot of impact. Man, this one is just like has his fingerprints all over it, and he brought a joy to the show. You know, so he was one of the younger writers, and you know, he just brought this fresh perspective. He ended up writing 12 episodes of the show. Other things about Harris, he invented a word. I don't know how many people out there have invented a word that made it into the dictionary, but Harris did that. He invented the word humble brag. So Rob, I remember you must have heard this going around, but
it's the best.
But it, you know, essentially humble brag is when, man, this episode started with the word brag. We're just going right into humble brag. It's when you brag about something, but you couch it in terms that also express your humility and how much you appreciate life and how much, you know, like it's just like, you know, man, so blessed to be on set today. So blessed to have this beautiful trailer. So blessed to get paid so much money and have all these beautiful decorations and whatever it is, right? You get what that is. But he came up with that, and I remember we had offices next door to each other in the Parks and Rec office when he first started the show. And first of all, I remember he loved the band Fish, so he would constantly blast Fish in the office next door to mine, which was horrible because horrible. But I remember going into his office one day. We were talking about this phenomenon. He had identified it. It made him very angry. It happened with a lot of, you know, entertainment people, et cetera. And he had a few targets, and he's like, I'm going to start a Twitter account called Humblebrag, at Humblebrag. So we all went into his office. It's like me and Aisha Muhar and Harris, and we saw him start the account in his office, and then he started retweeting people. And just that's how it started. He just started retweeting the worst offenders, and just like, you know, that's when the origin of the Humblebrag Twitter account, which later turned into a book and later turned into an entry in the dictionary.
And if I could just echo what you were saying, Alan, I think I had an interesting viewpoint of the writer's room. You know, the first few seasons, I was the writer's assistant sitting in the corner watching everything happen. I had a bit of a David Attenborough position watching, you know, everybody do their thing. And it was amazing we've talked about this, the Parks and Rec writing staff, maybe this is a humble brag, was incredible. I can't think of a single weak link. And yet still, you still see those apex writers in the pack. And that was Harris. It was incredible to watch him work. You would see his brain kind of do its Harris thing. And then all of a sudden, he would make a pitch that maybe at first you thought, is that something? And then that was the pitch. That was the episode. And I still remember him storming out of his room, his office, one day saying, I think I created a word or something like that. It was just an amazing thing to watch this guy work. I loved hearing you talk about him, Alan. And I'm curious, you also worked with him on Master of None and, you know, for years in Parks. What else? What are some of your great Harris moments?
So Harris had a thing called Foam Corner or Phone Corner. One thing on Parks or on Master of None. If we ever needed what's called chuffa in a show, which is like, it's a funny term. It's so two characters are walking into a room and you need two or three lines before they sit down. Like you need those lines because they can't just walk in silent. To make it feel real, they're just saying. So we call that chuffa, C-H-U-F-F-A or C-H-U-F-F-A-H. I don't know, whatever. It's a nonsense word. So what, like we called Harris the chuffa king because we're like, Harris, just we need three lines here. Just look at your phone. Look at whatever nonsense you just wrote down in the notes app. Like whatever nonsense you just wrote down, we'll just put it in the show. So there's some lines in Parks and Rec like that where he's like, what's your kind of favorite? What's your favorite kind of cake? And Donna, I think, says birthday cake. And he's like, that's not a kind of cake. That's like an occasion for a cake. She's like, yeah, whatever. It's my favorite. Like stuff that's not really a joke, but like just close joke approximate. Like, that's kind of what. And so that's what Foam Corner is. Phone Corner. They've done it on other podcasts, but just to give you an idea of who he was, I looked up a couple that I remember. It's like, these are not jokes. Where there's a will, there's a way-ins. That's something. That's what he said.
Why there's a will, there's a way-ins?
That's right, like a way-ins brother.
Amazing.
And then there's another one that says Wi-Fi because Fi. there's wheat thins. Let me know when you got wheat thicks. Give me that wheat. And then the legendary. I mean, of course, this is all from Comedy Bang Bang, but the legendary one. I want to open a Jamaican, Irish, Spanish small plate breakfast restaurant and call it Tapas the Morning to Ja. So anyway, that's Harris's foam corner. I want to dedicate this is a sensibility that unfortunately or fortunately from your point of view did permeate Parks and Rec a little bit. And I think Practice Date was a good showcase, his first credited episode. That is a little bit about Harris, but we'll talk more
about
it.
And by the way, for people who may not know, he is in Parks and Rec as an actor.
Of course, yes. He's part of the animal control group. So it's I believe his character's name is Harris. Harris and Brett, right, is the character. Him and Colton Dunn are in the animal control. So yeah, he's in the show. And what he brought to the show is just this sense of fun, very comedy forward. Apologies for the blue language, but sometimes Harris would say, motherfuckers just want to laugh, right? So we talk about story, we talk about character, we talk about all this stuff, but he would always push for the comedy. He would push for, you know, making the characters just fun and funny, and so you're having a good time watching the show.
How does that discussion go? Because I'm the same. Like when I, like as the actor, I'm like, guys, if people want plot and all that, they can watch the dramas. I'm watching a comedy, I just want to laugh. I hate to say it, I don't really care.
I'm struggling with it right now. I'm working on a show right now, and it's a tone issue, right? Every show has sort of a balance, right? You look at super, super joke-heavy shows, you know, like the ultimate is like an animated show, like Family Guy or something. That's all jokes, no plot, right? No story, no character. They don't care about lessons. You're not changing the characters. They're not learning. And then you go all the way to the other side. Now we look at comedies, and you know, like there's shows that are a little bit more dramatic, right? It's like, you know, a show like Atlanta is kind of like interesting and kind of whimsical and weird, but it's not, they're not going for jokes or like Maisel or shows like that. Like, you know, Fleabag has jokes in it, but it's more, a little bit more dramatic. And so there's a huge range, right? There's a huge, so you have to pick the tone of your show. And I think we've seen that in the episodes we've covered in this show already. In Parks and Rec, I think it started out a little bit quieter and then moved to a little bit more rollicking and fun and comedic. And Harris was part of that, and some of the other writers who joined season two, Aisha and Kitty Dipple and, you know, Mike Scully, that they all contributed as well. And it's a balance, because to me, Rob, I totally get where you're coming from. But I think as the writers of the show, and I think the showrunners of the show would say, you gotta care about the characters and you gotta care about the stories to be laughing in a lot of cases. And it's that balance, right? And I actually, there's a weird thing. I worked on South Park briefly, and Trey Parker and Matt Stone ran that show, of course. And Trey Parker, he only wanted story pitches and like character pitches. And he's like, if you don't care about the characters, no one's laughing. And he's just like this very earnest piece of advice from Trey Parker, which you wouldn't expect. Cause like the guy literally like writes jokes all the time. Right. But he's like, don't worry. Like I'll write jokes and stuff, but what is the reality of the world we're living in? And when it's consistent, then you're really onto something, I think.
Yeah. And I think this episode is, has the perfect amount of that. When you have these hitters, let them swing away, you know, and I'm sure a lot of that montage stuff of Amy's in this episode is written, and I'm sure some of it is just Amy just doing her thing.
Yeah, and again, she gets to go bigger in this one, which is really fun. And man, you also get to learn about Jerry and Donna a little bit more. You know, Jerry has the sad sack routines going in this one. There's a potentially ill-advised bit, but a bit in there nonetheless, where Donna admits she voted for David Duke, white supremacist. Amazing. So, you know, it's pretty broad, but it's like, but she's so high profile. It's like, oh, her reactions are so funny. Retta's reactions are so funny when it's like, this shit just got real. Like she's like when they're digging up dirt on each other, and she looks to camera. Rob's doing the look right now.
Yeah.
But she MJ, does the look to camera.
Retta's, for me, without a question, the Hall of Fame of looks to camera, in no particular order, are Adam Scott's sort of like vaguely confused, Aziz's gigantic eyed, smiley, excited, and Retta's like I can't believe this is happening. This is great. Look, those for me those three, you know, you can't compete.
Yeah, I think it happens. I think the first time it happens is after Tom reveals that both of Ron's ex-wives are named Tammy. And then he says, that was a Jaeger secret. You breached a Jaeger secret. And then Donna just looks at camera and she's like, yeah, this escalated a lot. But that's a delightful exchange. And then the talking head where Nick says, you know, why, yeah, my mom is also named Tammy. Why do you ask? It's just, my mother's also named Tammy.
That's a very good joke.
Total deadpan.
What I was struck by was Tom Haverford is in full Tom Haverford mode now. That crazy smile, wide-eyed like look that eventually made its way into the opening credits.
That's right. It's in there.
and Drunk Leslie, as I've said before, Drunk Leslie is my favorite Leslie. When you let Amy Poehler play drunk, you just stand back, get out of the way, because the magic is about to happen.
She goes big in this one. I forgot all that stuff because it's like she's really like, yeah. Oh, it's like, oh, wait, we have this extremely funny person as the lead of the show. Like, let's let her go. She does all those bad, intentionally bad accents, right? English accents. And she goes, she's playing drunk and she gets to do silly stuff and make stupid mistakes in the show. And then on the B story side, yeah, you have those Aziz moments where he's really fun. They're going nuts. And you get Ron playing saxophone at the end. So again, it's just a rollicking episode. It's like they really are, you know, I say they, I guess I worked on the show, but it really, it's like they're really going for it. It's like, but it truly, you know, it cuts loose in a way that embodied the spirit that the show would take on. And so everyone gets a great moment. How about another moment I love was Jerry finding out he's adopted. Like that happens accidentally. Like that there's just, yeah, the digging up dirt storyline. Like again, that's an example to me of something that comes about organically. Like it's in the world. It's like they're talking about public service. They're talking about politicians. Then you hang a little bit of a story on it. Like what if we all dig up dirt on each other? And then it becomes this character thing where you learn, it's a secret exposition. You learn about all these different characters and they can be funny, but you also deepen the relationship. And how about the pathos at the end when Ron finds out that, you know, Tom has a green card marriage? Like that punctures Tom and that makes you feel for Tom and they come to this truce. And so all that stuff's like, oh, wow, that stuff is really well constructed. So kudos to the people running the show.
You know, Tom Haverford being the connoisseur of all things cool and hip and happening has a BlackBerry in this episode.
Man, he's using this BlackBerry. Remember that little ball? Remember the BlackBerry Pearl with a little trackball?
Yes.
Now we're aging ourselves like a child. Yes. It's like, I've never seen what you guys are talking about. But those BlackBerries had like a sphere in the middle, like a rubber sphere that you would use. Sometimes computers would have those too. Anyway,
the worst cameras ever. I mean, the worst cameras of all time.
Well, and then at some point at the end, some lady comes up, an older lady comes up to Duke Silver, and she has like a big digital camera. It's like, no one has that. Like, no one's taking that to a concert. It's like, you use your phone. But yeah, he had a BlackBerry. That was really funny, man.
So let's talk about Duke Silver. You got to walk me through this. You're in the writer's room, and somebody goes, I know, Ron Swanson should have an alter ego. And at that point, people say, you're fired?
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I looked in the research a little bit, and it either was pitched by Greg Daniels or Dana Gould. And if it was Greg, it's like, okay, Greg created the show, so no one can fire him. Yeah. But if it's Dana, it was like, well, maybe he can be fired. Dana was really funny. Dana was a consultant. He would come in like once or twice a week. He worked on The Simpsons, so he just kind of like a stand-up who's been around forever, like a legend of all comedy. So regardless of who pitched it, it is one of those things where, like we talked about a second ago, you have to decide whether it's too crazy for the show, whether it's too crazy for the world of the show. Like, will it break the show? And in this case, it sort of just gave this other dimension, and the show became a little bit more cartoony, and that's okay. Like, people really enjoyed that. But I don't know. It is. I look back, and I'm like, I don't know if I would allow that. But yeah, it's funny, man. It certainly gives Ron another dimension. That's for sure.
I don't think I ever had any interaction with Duke Silver, and I obviously knew about it, and I knew it was a thing, but I don't think I'd ever really properly really seen it until rewatching this episode. And here's the thing that struck me was, like, it's one thing to have him have this alter ego, and it's so funny, this smooth, jazzy, sort of sexy Barry White, you know, patter that he has is great. But then he literally says, I've cultivated an image in the office very carefully. And you're like, oh, wait, so he's self-aware enough to know it? Wait. And what are you saying? Are you saying that his office persona is something that's a pose? He's cultivated?
Yeah, it's very self-aware. We also talk about that, where you shouldn't have characters be aware of their own characteristics in the show. But, you know, look, I think something that really pulled us through, and sometimes pulls you through in many ways on a show, is when the force of nature of the actor behind a role is so great.
Yep.
You can smooth other things like that. You can smooth other things like that, where the writing is in 100% perfect, detail perfect, everything's, you know, perfect for 100 episodes. When you have Nick Offerman and his look, his persona, his voice, his acting level, his comedy, his mustache, everything about him, when all of that is such a strong, strong force, it's almost like it's just going to smooth everything over. And I think that's the case with Ron Swanson, because it's like, it was, to me, look, I think a lot of credit goes to the writers and to Mike and Greg for creating this character. But man, when you fuse that with Nick Offerman, it's just so powerful. And people just accepted this Duke Silver thing as like, yeah, he plays jazz saxophone in Eagleton on the side. It's like, wait, sure. What? Like, and it happens in episode 10 of the show. It's like it's not like season 7. It's like, fuck, we don't know what to do. Let's just make him a saxophone player. Episode 10. It's like, it's pretty soon. So, no, it's a wild swing. It's a wild swing. And also, like, it sort of resolves a story where you just found out a guy's marriage is a sham. Like, that is also funny. It, like, kind of goes from kind of serious to like a really wacky kind of ending. But anyway, it was a joy to watch. And then it dovetailed with the A story in a great way, where I love the story turn at the end, where, you know, Officer Dave comes in and is like, you know, well, don't be so nervous about your first date, because tonight's actually our second date. You know, it's like we hung out, and like, you know, that was actually touching. And then it just kind of ends. But yeah, that stuff all worked for me. I thought that was lovely.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop,
We have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
One of the running bits I have about the show is gifts, parties, and jobs. Like the show is just gifts, parties, and jobs. And like maybe we should add secret persona, because like so many people have secret personas on the show. there's Burt Macklin and Duke Silver, obviously, but there's Janet Snakehole for Aubrey, and then by the way, Ben Wyatt, who joins the show later with you, he has like 10 secret things that he does. He like does claymation. He wants to start a calzone restaurant. I mean, like, there's just, everyone has so many interests. It's like, man, they just have so many interests on this show.
Greg, you must know how all of this was put in. What secret sauce do you have to share with our listening peeps?
If I remember correctly, I believe Greg Daniels pitched Duke Silver, but it was one of those moments in the writer's room when everyone was just pitching on what his album should be called, that Dana Gould shouted from across the room, "Hi-ho, Duke," and it immediately was typed into the script.
It's a legendary joke because his name is Duke Silver, and we obviously go "Hi-ho, Silver," but "Hi-ho, Duke" is really funny, man. I just remember that.
"Hi-ho, Duke."
And I wanted to make a comment, too, about what you were saying about the alternate personas. I remember Greg Daniels saying in the room that with a character comedy, if people love the character, you'll kind of love them doing anything. And so there was a lot of time spent in the early days getting people to love these characters so that when Ron Swanson becomes Duke Silver or when Andy Dwyer becomes Burt Macklin, people were like, yes, this is incredible. I must see more of it.
This is also the introduction of one of my favorite satellite characters, Purd Hapley.
Just one of the characters that was the most fun to write for, because he has a very small joke in this one where he's like, and now in a story that just won't stop unfolding, or you know, something similar to that. And then we took that. This is an example of what happens on a comedy, right? You take one line a character has, and then in the future episodes, you're like, well, all we have is that one line. Let's just turn whatever he did that one line into some crazy like personality for his entire character. And so later we just had him talk in circles about, you know, every line he ever had was incredibly circuitous and just never got to the point. But yeah, it was casting. Jay Jackson, I guess, was a newscaster. So it was, you know, like he just felt like a newscaster. And one of our favorite moments, I think, in casting the show, you know, sometimes we'd watch the tapes from our casting director and you know, watch him in the room. And so he read this audition for Purd Hapley. And because he was a newscaster, he did it the way a newscaster would. So we gave him the line, and he began his line like holding a microphone, and he said, 3, 2, 1. Now, in a story that is not, you know, that will never stop developing, 3, 2, 1. The story will not stop developing. He would count down 3, 2, 1
Amazing.
Before reading the line, which no one else did because they were all actors pretending to be newscasters. Jay Jackson was a newscaster.
I love that because that's, you know, there are a lot of people who, I'm sure a lot of actors out there listening to this, and it just goes to show you that, like, if you can figure out something special to do in an audition, man, you know, that's the sky's the limit.
It's a good tip, and make sure that's, I mean, make sure that swing connects, but it, and you also, like, see him in big budget movies, so sometimes he's in, like, Fast and Furious, and he's just a newscaster. I like to pretend he's Purd Hapley. Like, it's just like he's in that universe, too. They're all in the same universe. But I think in later seasons, you know, he would always, he's playing Purd Hapley. He's playing a newscaster. And part of the joke was that he had this incredible voice, this incredible presence, this incredible cadence that was unmistakable. But I think he, at a certain point, was like, am I just going to keep playing this character? So we'd always have him do the lines as Purd. And sometimes he would just kind of read it more like a normal guy. And then sometimes I go to him like, you got to read this one like a newscaster. He's like, okay. Read it like a newscaster. It's like, yeah, that's the bit, man.
Well, that, you know, it's funny because that is one of the things about Parks and Rec that I struggled with. Is there's like kind of a, I don't know how to put this, because it's not a negative, it's not. But like I was like, when I started playing Chris, I was like, so I'm going to be like super positive in this scene too?
Yeah, I know.
And you realize, no, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You play that, this is an orchestra, that is your instrument, play that instrument. And it really makes it work. And the it's like the more you try to overcomplicate it, the more you try to it's an interesting discipline to be able to be okay with playing a note that is very similar over and over and over again.
That's a great way of putting it. And look, ideally, if you're hopefully writing the show correctly and shaping it correctly, you get to play different scales and different keys with that instrument, right? You get yes. You can play a lot of interesting stuff with one instrument, you know, Rob? Yes. Like, I think that's yep. a great metaphor, because yep. you can have great solo flute, you can have great solo violin, but, you know, and we never wanted to box actors in and be like, no, you're doing every line the same way. Look, Pert Hapley's different from Chris, or different sure. from like Ron Swanson or you know, whoever. So, but you know, look, the more a character has to do, the more range they can show. And yeah, you know, we eventually did show Chris get sad. We showed Chris fall in love. We showed Chris's heart yep. get broken and all that stuff. So, you know, look, we never want an actor to feel like they're boxed in and feel like that, oh man, every line reads the same. But at the same time, you're right. It all kind of works in concert. That's what's beautiful about an ensemble show like this is the pieces do fit together. And if suddenly Chris is super negative for 7 episodes, like it throws everything out of balance. It's instruments in an orchestra or ingredients in a recipe, right? So that's an interesting observation. And I totally sympathize with actors being like, oh, same thing every episode. We'll try our best to not have it be that. But, you know.
That said, I'd love to see Pert Hapley doing his acting thing. That would have been great.
Pert Hapley, I believe is a jazz singer of some kind. I feel like in one of the rap parties, he like sang with Duke Silver and Mouse Rat. By the way, Duke Silver would play with Mouse Rat at the rap parties sometimes. That's another insane thing about the show. But yeah, he would come out and play saxophone. I remember that too. It was very, very wild. Kept using all the ingredients, all the characters.
I would say to Nick, is Duke Silver playing tonight? Like, I don't know. I have to ask him.
Now
is it my imagination, or is Pratt not in this episode?
Oh wow, I think you're right. And this is actually also interesting. Like, this weirdly has to do with contract stuff.
Yes,
this is gets into weird behind the scenes business stuff. But I do remember at some point it was like, look, some of these actors are 7 out of 13 or 10 out of 13, and not 13 out of 13. And that means episodes, right? So you don't have to pay them for all those episodes. And in fact, you are not budgeted to pay them. So if you have them, then you have to pay them extra, and it's not out of the budget. So I remember there was something really funny season 1 or season 2, but it was saying who was 7 of 13 and 10 out of 13. And there was just these moments of, I feel like a PA would come in, production assistant, bring in like a card that said all the actors and how many episodes they were booked for. And yeah, I remember Mike being really surprised. It was like, wait, Aziz is 7 out of 13? It wasn't that. It was something like that, that was like, wait a minute, we don't have, like, it wasn't Polar because she was all episodes. But like, yeah, it was someone really, like, big characters, like Nick or whoever, was just like, 7 out of 13? It makes no sense. Like, it just doesn't make any sense at all. But yeah, Pratt was bumped from a guest star season 1 to a regular season 2. So I don't think he was all episodes. He wasn't all episodes produced. So yeah, he's just not in this one.
So sad for Pratt.
I mean, what happened to that guy?
I know. It just ruined his career. I just love the... By the way, it's so funny that Anne, as a nurse, has a lot of time on her hands to be at the Parks and Rec department.
That always made us laugh. Like, why is Anne there? Is she really a nurse? Does she have like a secret identity? Is she not a nurse? Is she lying? Like, that was fun. That was fun, too. We used to pitch on what her real job was.
What was the... When Ron Swanson gives his scientific scale of hotness in the episode. And at the top of the hotness is Steffi Graf.
That was really funny, man. I forget who pitched that. I think it might've been Dan Gore, but this was also, by the way, before we entered it into canon, that he loved pretty brunette women and breakfast food, basically. Like, he loved brunette women, but Steffi Graf made it to the top. So I think like there's some sort of element of disconnect there, but we let it slide, because I think he just loves like the WNBA. He loves like strong women. He like does not want a shrinking violet, and like Steffi Graf, like a perfect joke at the end of that was really funny. Like, it took me by surprise. I forgot about it.
Were there any other pitches you remember for...
God, I don't know. I think it was a lot of like athletes. I think it was like strong women, like people who were just like something about Steffi Graf also, like, not just a very successful athlete, but just no nonsense. Like, you remember, it's just like, yeah, man, I'm the best, and like, just really good at my job, and like, graceful, but also just really strong and fluid. But yeah, that just, I feel like when that got pitched, it's like, it's going in, just like, put it in the script.
Do you know that in the room when everybody's pitching and one is clearly the one?
It's a relief. It's like, yeah, let's move on. So I think we talked about this briefly, but the way it's set up kind of is anyway, in the Parks and Rec writers room, there was a main computer with a keyboard that would be at the sort of head of the table. And there was a long, like, banquet style table. And then the other writers would sit around this table, and there were other monitors that showed the screen but did not have keyboards. So basically, the person running the room, you know, at the time was typically Mike, sometimes it was Dan, and then later seasons it was some other people as well. We would go through the script, you know, we're in final draft looking at the script, and okay, we're on this joke, everyone goes around and we just pitch on the joke. And you know, yeah, it's some jokes would take hours. Some jokes would take 2 minutes. Some jokes would take literally hours. And it was like, oh, this is really difficult. But yeah, and we started, so like, you know, that kind of system they used on The Office, and I think it's pretty common with shows, and you know, we would do variations of it, right? Like on Master of None, we would sometimes, if we were working out of someone's house, we would just put up, you know, on Apple TV, we put up the screen on the Apple TV, and everyone could just sit there on the couch and pitch. And so it's like, oh, it's a smaller room, like you can just hang out, it's a little less formal. But yeah, for a show like that, with at a certain point, I think season two, we got above 10 writers, then it's like, okay, we're using this kind of banquet table setup.
And so when Greg Daniels pitches, he's got air superiority. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
right?
but I feel like he, but here's the thing about this room in particular, and I thought was a great thing. Those guys don't have egos like that. They just don't have egos like that. They're really not just diplomatic, because that expresses a sort of meaning where they're just listening. But you know, like, they were genuinely curious what other people had to say. They were interested in other people's opinions, and they valued them. And so, look, ultimately, they're going to make the decisions, but it wasn't like, hey, that's my pitch, it's going in. It's like, well, is this the best pitch? Like, is this the funniest? Is this hitting with the most people? Because you might think, even if you're the showrunner, you might like think like, oh, that joke is my favorite. But if you got 10 writers and they seem to really vastly prefer a different joke, you might pick that other joke, because you're weighing your own opinion against theirs. So that's where it kind of comes into play. Like, oh, I might not get this one, but hey, this one seems to hit amongst younger people or whatever, yeah, whatever demographic, and that works in that sense. So yeah, Greg would never force stuff in. I mean, he loved to just hang out by this point, I think season two, I think it was largely Mike at the keyboard anyway. So I think Greg was just like Greg would come over and have fun on Parks. He would just have fun, because it's like, I think he was more stressed out about The Office. I think like at a certain point he was running The Office when it was ending. He's like, oh my God, I got to end The Office. Like, well, how much pressure is that? And meanwhile, he'd come over to Parks and like, it's a bunch of young kids having fun. And Mike was helping run the room and really, you know, running stuff. So that was really easy for him.
Amazing.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
I feel like we need to hear from the people.
Let's do it. Let's take a trip into the Pawnee Town Hall. Where do you want to do the town hall this week? What part of town?
Lake Wawasee.
Okay, great. We're doing it by the lake. This question comes from Rosalind from Rosemead. I like the alliteration there. Who are your favorite pop culture politicians outside of Parks and Recreation and The West Wing, the two shows that you worked on, Rob? Who are your favorite pop culture politicians?
But he's not a politician.
Who are you thinking of?
I was going to Jack Donaghy of 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Well, he seems like a politician. He's not.
Fun fact, they were gonna do like another show with him where he runs for mayor. So you're in the vicinity. They didn't end up doing that show, but they almost did that. I got a couple. One I like is Clay Davis from The Wire. A really
Ooh,
fun one, man. His great tagline, great catchphrase, just the word shit extended a long time. So Clay Davis, really just a horrible guy too, just a horrible character. Really good. Who else
it would be.
Oh, I got a really good one. I just had to Google his full name just because I really want to read the whole thing. You guys remember a movie called Idiocracy?
Oh,
there's
oh
a
my
president
God, the
named President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho. So that is played by
that's
Terry
it.
Crews. He's got the machine gun. He's got the long hair. So that's
I'm going with that. That movie, Idiocracy, is, first of all, it's all true. And that movie's amazing. That movie is absolutely. I had Dax Shepard on literally.
Yeah.
My podcast, and we talked about Idiocracy at length because that if you haven't seen it, it's not a perfect movie by any means, but it is absolutely riddled with genius.
It's got enough good stuff in there, and it's like now that movie is like a little bit older, so you watch it like, wow, that is like sadly true. It's really almost like a series of sketches, but it's really fun. It's really funny, man. Yeah, and Maya Rudolph in that movie, and yeah, a bunch of really funny people. There's a bunch of presidents that like are honorable mentions for me, where it's like the president Independence Day, the president Air Force One, the president, like. Yeah,
who's Bill? What's Bill Pullman? Independence Day.
Independence
God
Day.
God help our nation, whatever the hell. Yeah. He's got that great speech.
Yeah, legendary speech. Get off my plane, Air Force One, of course.
Get off my plane.
There's a lot of good ones, man. There's a lot of good ones.
I know I don't answer every town hall question, but this is one I got to answer. I got to pop in. I love politics, and I love politically set things. I'm not allowed to talk about The West Wing, although it is my favorite. President Bartlett, the top. However, to follow the rules, I have to call out Dave from Dave. Have to. It's an amazing movie, an amazing role, amazing character. And of course, Andrew Shepherd, the American president. Just a beautiful, beautiful romantic comedy. Highly recommend. And this is just coming in on the wire. Schulte's calling out Bullworth. And of course, he's absolutely right. Back to you.
That was great.
That's it. That's all we got for this episode. We
got nothing more.
All right, cool.
Yeah, join us next week. We got another great episode and equally mediocre hosting. all coming up for you next week.
That's not the way to be a braggart, Rob.
I got scared. I don't want to be called a braggart. I don't want to do a humble brag.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell a friend. Thanks to producer Greg and producer Schulte. Goodbye from Pawnee.
Bye, everybody.
This episode of Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.